And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 155.
155?
Yes. I am one of your hosts, Silas Lindenstein.
I'm the other one of your hosts, Samantha Rund.
And welcome to Black and a Half, the longest-running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Yeah. Prove it otherwise. Right? Yeah, show us the money.
No, you don't have to fact check but you can show us the money.
Luck.
I'm down with that.
Good luck fact checking 8 million podcasts. We're here, and we welcome today a very special guest, actor, musician, performer, future Judge Dredd, Amber Wolf, to the program. Amber stopped by. Amber is someone this weekend I was at a film video shoot. I don't know what we call it.
Industrial shoot.
Yeah, where you had a mask on and I thought you were Mexican at first.
That's my life without a mask too. Whatever.
No, without a mask, then, I could tell without the mask.
I'm at like, lunch, you could tell because I was eating fried chicken. And,
yes.
Oh, boy.
Well, I could also tell because I'm part of the club. Yeah. I'm part of the half black club.
But you're the Mamala club, right? Aren't you?
What?
What is this?
Mamala?
Well, I'm a Mamala because I'm a stepmom, but I'm not. I'm black and white. Just
oh,
black
I
and
white. I thought maybe you had. Because I saw your shirt that said, my vice president's going to look like me.
Yeah.
So well, I thought it was like directly. Trump. Okay.
No, Silas, I'm a Negro.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. You know what I was going to say that I hated, which I forgot to say later in the episode?
What?
I know. I'll do it early. I hate that when they're having you check all the boxes for like your ethnicity and they're like, check one.
I'm yes.
Like, black, white, Asian, or Native
you
American, blah, blah,
blah.
You
all that apply now.
No.
Here's not everywhere.
Then you get to another part and they say Hispanic, Latino, or not Hispanic,
that's
Latino.
A different box. That's not because it's...
No, because you can be all of those things. And they want you to pick it, just makes me so angry.
Well, that used to make me as a kid. That was always, that's a new problem. That's a new problem.
It's not
a
race.
Well, but then again, I was always mad because I would always have to check other because they wouldn't let you check more than one.
Yeah.
But now that's interesting because that is a whole new thing. Because what do you do if your
ethnicity in regard to being a Hispanic or non-Hispanic is different?
How is that different?
Look, I used to live in California and I knew it then, but I don't anymore.
No, but I'm saying, isn't it your country of origin? If you're Hispanic or Latino, isn't that saying if you have origins from a country that is a Hispanic or Latino country?
I'm going to look this up.
Okay.
Because
okay.
There is a specific reason they ask, and I think it does deal with a funding issue.
Well, of
but
course.
There is a,
I mean, I'm sure it's about the money, but
right,
I'm just
but
saying.
But there's a reason why they ask it in the way that they do, and I forget it right now. But I knew it when I was in California.
Anyway,
because it came
for
up
people
a lot.
Such as myself, it makes me angry because then I have to deny some part of myself. So I hate that very much.
Yeah.
I'm not denying that I'm not Hispanic. I'm declaring.
I'm shouting.
As far as I know,
I'm not. I can pass for one. I can pass for Hispanic.
For money.
Yeah, like we're like Dominican and money, Cuban too. I'm just, it pisses me off. I'm like, they don't got a box for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think that's difficult.
Yeah. Anyway, that was my rant at the beginning.
Puerto Rico's not even a state. So I'm okay. They don't get that. They don't even get an electoral college. Look, we're here. We are present. This episode, we find out Amber's origin story. We talk about safety traveling because I don't feel safe.
You made it sound like I became a superhero some way along the way.
Everyone's origin story. Yeah, it is. You are. You're going to be a superhero. Her origin story. And then, yeah, and she answers the seven questions as always. The world famous seven questions.
Very happy. Very happy to be part of the, like, we make what, 1.5 black people and 1.5 white people at least.
An even amount. We, today's episode, brought to you by, one of our sister podcasts, You're Buying a Home with Silas Sinnenstein. That is another podcast I host, where I teach people around the country how to, the process of buying a home and connect them with realtors in their area. And if you are, if you're anywhere in the area looking in the world, in the United States, actually in Canada too, looking to buy a home, feel free to email me at silas@blackandahalf.com and I'll connect you with somebody. And if you live locally in the Seattle, Washington area, I can even help you out. That's brought to you by myself, Silas Sinnenstein, at Boutique Brokerage. And then it's also brought, the show's also brought to us by.
Also brought to you by yet another podcast, Beyond Technique, with me, Samantha Rund. I have on guests. We talk about performance, the ways that it can help enhance your lives. And it's a lot of fun. So please check that one out as well. And if you're looking for a coach to help you with performance skills, and voice, body, and mind, so you can communicate with more of your whole self, improve your life on or off the stage, on or off the screen, I'm more than happy to help you with that. You could reach me at beyondtechniquecoaching@gmail.com.
And of course, if you want to be a bigger fan of the show, you can become one of our Patreon members. Go to patreon.com/blackandahalf and join the League of Extraordinary Listeners for as little as $1. Or become an Inner Circle member for just a little bit more, like Tara Widener, Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel. They help support the show, and you can too. And of course, if you enjoyed yourself at all today, maybe learned a little bit about the Black experience or whatnot, or the nerd experience, or any experience, if you had an experience, please go to Apple Podcasts and give a 5-star review, rating, all that. We'd appreciate it. Thank you. Do it right now. But anyway, this was so bossy. I am. Yeah. You know, you gotta be direct. That's what I've learned. Just gotta like tell them, just hit pause, go do it, come back, then pay attention to your children. In that order, but right now what we want you to do is to just open your heart and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 155, Amber Wolf and the Future of Law Enforcement.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
And then I didn't realize they knew each other until it happened, or I said, hey, I'm having so-and-so on. You're like, oh, I'm friends with her. Samantha knows everybody, and I should have known better.
And I didn't remember that. And Samantha, did you go to grad school with Beverly Sotelo?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what, you know, not to go off on people that nobody else has any idea who they are, but Beverly is one of my dear friends from high school.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I was like, Facebook, you know.
Is that a teacher? Yeah.
We weren't the same year, but we were there. No. Oh. We were there in the same like
Beverly time. Beverly's one of my little huddle of girlfriends I still have from the all girls Catholic school.
Okay.
It was pretty much all Filipino, so I stood about a head taller than everybody.
Yeah.
But Beverly's a little taller than that.
Are you drinking out of a unicorn mug?
I was just noticing that it was a unicorn with wings.
What is a unicorn with wings?
A unicorn Pegasus.
We should always feature people's what they're drinking out of when it's something special. Mm-hmm. it's small acting community, so I guess I shouldn't be surprised with people who are actually booked know each other. That's why I don't know anybody. I will tell you, this was a funny thing. I got another audition, which is rare for me. You two are like, yeah, every day. I got another audition right away, and the directions, like, I clicked on a link. It's something in Portland, and there were directions for examples on how you're supposed to audition, and it was Lowell.
Yes.
Listeners, Amber and I just did an acting gig this weekend together. And one of our other castmates was the example person.
Yeah. I did that just like a couple hours ago. And man, I understand that people have to give really specific, if anybody listening doesn't know, like, people give really specific directions for how you're going to videotape yourself. And sometimes I wish that they would just, if they could just be a little friendly, like, hey, if you do this, then you're going to make all of our lives easier. Thank you so much. But this time it was sort of this like, and you need to do this and do it like this, and you do it like that and not like this. And you just, by the end of it, I just want to say,
it's all of it. I didn't audition for it. I just saw the thing. I said, I passed. I want to talk about why, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
Today. We'll talk about that. Actually, go right into that. So I passed on an audition today, and I want to see, like, if it feels, is this overreactionary of me? It was a golfer of a gig, potentially two days in Portland in a couple weeks. And I was like, no, I'm not leaving the state still. I'm just not comfortable leaving the state for a couple days. Like, maybe if they said one day, I go in, then I leave. Like, now you're asking me to stay the night.
Yeah.
Besides, like, then I'm like, I got kids at home. I don't want to drag anything back. And so I told my agent, I was like, I got to be, once I'm vaccinated, I'll consider these.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't have a place to, I have to get my wife to take work off because I can't have sitters now.
Well, yeah, right? And the thing is, though, like you said, you didn't want to bring something back once you're vaccinated. There's no evidence saying that you wouldn't bring something back anyway.
I know, but I mean, but at least there's less of a chance of bringing something, even though you're vaccinated. What they say is they don't think you can catch it as likely. But
what's fascinating is people keep talking about out of state like it's some other planet. Like what, like the difference, how much of a difference is there really from you going and staying in Vancouver for two nights or you going and staying in, you know, San Francisco? I've been back and forth to San Francisco to help my parents out like 7 times since the pandemic started.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But it is funny with like, have you been out of the state in the last 2 weeks? Yeah. And you're like, Jesus Christ.
Well,
like,
I think it depends though. What state you're going to.
A few weeks ago, I got a thing to like, would have been 3 nights in Boise. And I said, fuck no, I'm not even considering that. Are you kidding me? Boise? Yeah. No, they don't take anything seriously right now. I'm not. And he said, I said that. I was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing Boise. He's like, yeah, no problem. No.
I was staying when I was on my way back one time. I managed to like listen to little bits of some of your other episodes. And I stayed in Roseburg, Oregon.
Ah, yeah.
And that was, I won't be any kind of specific about where I stayed, but like it was an Airbnb situation. And it was one of the first times that I encountered other people that were sort of like, well, I'm sorry, I forgot my mask. And she said to me like, oh, well, we'll just say you have a health condition. Like, and the hosts I encountered weren't wearing a mask. And I was just like,
they don't believe they don't believe it in Roseburg. They don't believe it the thing until it became one of the highest populated counties and cities in the we have stories of my wife's family is like, what is going on? I'm surprised they have Airbnb. I thought Airbnb might be too liberal for them, like in general. I guess maybe they like the lack of regulation.
Yeah, I can tell you later more about it. It was an interesting place, but
my dad's there right now.
Man, Airbnb. You guys done those before?
Yes, I did one when I went to the New York Laughing Devil Comedy Festival, and I ended up staying with an improver.
Oh, well, that's neat. I mean, I think I did one with several other people once. Like, we rented out a big place. Maybe there was another one. I don't know. But here's the thing. It's just the first time I heard it described, I was thinking murderers. That, like, I'm like, I don't trust random people I meet, like, on the, like, when I was riding the bus to, like, strike up a conversation with a stranger on a bus. But, like, I'm going to go stay in their house. Like, yeah. I've seen enough Dateline and all sorts of things to just, like,
have you seen, did you have the same fear of, like, Lyft and Uber?
My mom raised me to be afraid of everything and nothing at the same time.
Were you afraid, like, of Lyft and Uber, though? Like, because that was a common fear.
Did I ever take a Lyft or Uber? Yeah, I think I did. But I was like scared of the taxi too. Like, I mean, here's the thing. Like,
frightening. No.
Yeah. Well, so is a Lyft and an Uber.
I know.
I mean, they're like, anytime you get into a car with somebody, your life is in danger. And that's even if they're not a murderer. It could be your friend. There's accidents that happen. Yeah. But I mean, that would be not on purpose.
Wait, is your mother white or your father white?
No, my mom's black.
Okay. What? Huh? Your mom's black?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would have thought that there would be the white mom that would be.
No, because it wasn't like she loves watching, like, you know, I was watching 60 Minutes, you know, all the stuff, you know, and it's just, it's the, like, she always wanted us to be informed, wants us to be informed so that we're afraid enough to know to always, like, take care of ourselves. Like, just don't be like, oh, everything's fine. But at the same time is like, you can do anything. Don't ever let anybody tell you you can't do something.
Yeah.
Like, can't is not part of your vocabulary. Oh, but you're going to the comedy club? Make sure somebody walks with you. Maybe I can go with you. Which is really sweet. I'm like, Mom, I lived in Los Angeles by myself. I think I can go to the open mic tonight or go to the show.
So Airbnbs, I've been doing them a ton going back and forth to San Francisco at first because they were real specific about, like, here's our cleaning process. But then I stayed near my friend's house in Oakland, and she told me that, she said, oh, I forgot to tell you that I drove by. And I was like, no, she shouldn't stay there. But she forgot that. So I show up and it's the first level. It's around the corner from her house in North Oakland, which can be, you know what I mean? It's one of those, you go two blocks away and you're like, you know, like San Pablo Avenue. And you're like, oh, not so good.
Right.
But it seemed like, okay, but it was, you know, first floor and you walk in and there's just that smell. It's like you're staying in your aunt's, you know, in-law apartment. And but most of the time I feel like the things that are funny to me are how much people know how to be a host or not.
Mm.
Like, there's only one roll of toilet paper extra, you know, or they don't, there's no salt and pepper. Like, just, and it sounds like I'm sounding so bougie right now, but it's very fascinating. What?
You want salt and pepper on your food?
What?
Okay, Rockefeller. You know,
when I went to New York, it was funny because first I didn't stay at an Airbnb. I just stayed at I got connected with a comic there to stay at their house. And then I got there and he had apparently offered a couple people to stay there and didn't tell one of the roommates, and she was all mad about us being there.
Oh, God.
And it was very uncomfortable. And then, but I had messaged everyone I was trying to see about staying at their house because I was like, I'm doing stand-up comedy. I'm going to be coming in late. Is that going to be okay? And one place I hit up, she's like, they had some rules on there where they tended to not take, I guess, they didn't say it, but I guess they told me later they wouldn't take single men usually. But when I messaged them and I was like, look, I mentioned having a kid and stuff because I didn't want, so that they would know I'm a good guy, right? I don't know. But like, I was saying I do stand up and they're like, oh, I'm an improv. She's like, I'm an improver, and the other roommate, she's a actor. You'll be fine here. That's fine. And they told me later that and so I was just like the third, there's a three bedroom and they just rented out this third bedroom to people. But it was neat, but it was the closest I went to. It's the only time I've done it and stayed with people there.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. Like I'm always staying in a place that's either like completely separate, or it's like it's somebody's guest cottage, or it's like the lower or the upper place. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I don't think in New York that's possible.
Yeah.
It's less well. Yeah. Not for as cheap as I wanted, but
when I started finding that, like that one, the one in Oakland, when I just sort of decided that I was going to lose the money that I would lose by not staying there. And I went like a 5-minute drive into Emeryville and stayed at a really nice hotel that was actually ended up being the same price. And I had like a king size bed, a bedroom, a living room.
Oh,
and
is it because
kitchen?
Is it because hotels are rock bottom prices right now? Is that why?
I think that might be part of it. I mean, okay. But also then I sort of learned that like, I'm like, how boring is this conversation?
No. What?
Well, we're all so desperate to travel and to like see other places. Like, tell us about your hotel stay.
Well, my hotel stay is not nearly as nice as like, I've so enjoyed the drive. The first couple of times I went down and went to Crater Lake and back, and then I've been going up and down, just up and down the 5. And, you know, after you drive someplace many times, you have these little places. You're like, this is my favorite rest stop.
Yeah.
Like literally, I'm like, this is my favorite place to pee.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
my favorite place to pee is at the Weed Airport rest stop. Okay. In Weed,
yeah.
California.
Oh, no. I know that one. Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you kind of come down into this big valley and it's amazing and it's beautiful. And it's interesting, like those places that you're like, yeah, this is my favorite place to pee. And then you're like, oh, and then I drive by the Rainbow Trucks and Mount Shasta.
Yeah. Have you felt safe doing all the traveling, or?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that when I stop, I don't stop for very long. You know, I get out of my car, I go to the bathroom, I go back to my car, you know, and I think that's the thing that I know it's not a great thing necessarily to be traveling, but when I realize, when I think about how many people I'm actually encountering,
yeah,
I'm never around anybody for 20 minutes. You know what I mean?
Realized that this weekend, this may sound odd, but it's the first time I've used a bathroom outside of my house in about a year. I don't go when I'm at stores. I have not gone. I'm like, nope. Not going to do it. Let's get home.
Well, this weekend was the first time. Oh, maybe no, maybe not. Never mind. That was going to be funny. And now it's not. I was going to say it's the first time that I've had somebody like putting their fingers in my cleavage to put a microphone in.
You're like first.
Yeah. Do you know how hard that was this weekend, Samantha? Like it's the first time on the set with a big group of people. And I knew a lot of the crew and everybody already. And trying to be like politically correct and kind of Me Too correct and that kind of stuff. Like, what would happen is like somebody would say something and the other person would say, I'm trying not to say all the things that I'm thinking right now, you know, which was, it was interesting.
We got lucky.
It's nice and vague enough for me to have no idea what you're talking about.
Samantha.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
We got,
like about what you're saying, like, you know, people, so you want to say what you're thinking, but then you can't say what you're thinking because it's a professional experience. Is that what you mean?
You knew everybody, but you knew
there's
a lot
alcohol.
Of people.
There's alcohol in here too. That, you know, doesn't help.
No, so it's all good.
We were on set.
I was just thinking about the mic still, because I was like, I normally take it and I'm like, thanks, I'll do it myself and just kind of like.
Yeah. Oh, no. No, but I mean, like, yeah, I trailed it down, but, I got a lot going on there. So it was that kind of thing where, like, I didn't know the sound
guy.
Some
of us long for touch, Samantha. Okay. We're like, we'll take it where we get it.
So the sound guy says.
Never mind. I was going to say you got two hands. You got your own hands, buddy.
Well, now I'm trying to explain this in detail and it's ridiculous. So the sound guy is going to put the pack in my, you know, in like the bra strap in the back. Mm-hmm. And the wardrobe guy is standing there too, who is this lovely older gay man. And the sound guy says, all right, I'm coming in. And the wardrobe guy goes, Is that clear now? Like,
that's what it was. I definitely have to curb like my desire to like go for a punchline sometimes. People, if they don't know me, they might think something.
So, Amber, did you why did you feel you need to hold back if you knew the people?
Well, it just hit me all of a sudden. And I didn't know every single person. I didn't know our sound guy originally, but you know, like, it just hit me all of a sudden. I hadn't been out in a workplace like this. You know what I mean? Like, cause otherwise I'm doing stuff like music stuff or burlesque stuff. And that's more loosey goosey, but like, this is like, you're at this place and it's professional. But then again, I knew enough of the director and the production people that I knew that we all joke and have a good time. So I don't know, like all of a sudden I was like, oh God, that's right. We have this kind of thing where like people aren't supposed to say, hey, I like your dress and things like that. Or they might get in trouble.
Yeah.
I don't know who they'd report to, but so all of a sudden it was like my natural nature of, again, but doing the punchline. Yeah.
That's terrible. If you can't even tell somebody you like their dress in a non-creepy fashion.
Yeah.
You know,
really?
Well, especially as a lady.
I like your dress.
Well, I'm saying, especially as a lady to be able to say it to somebody else, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, I
to
like your
another
dress.
Lady.
Well, yeah. I figure.
Or a man, if they're wearing a dress, why not? You know?
Yeah, exactly. The older I get, I feel like the more I can kind of get away with stuff. Cause I can just be like, oh honey, that's so sweet. You know, I can just, you know, you add the little honey or the little, a little bit of the Southern Black lady, you know what I mean?
My goodness. I saw this, it's a little article or pictures or something of this auntie who dressed up for her virtual church service almost every Sunday. Aww. With like the glorious hats and everything.
That's awesome. Yeah,
that's what you made me think of that.
We were, I think we're pretty lucky. Amber and I, this shoot that we did was an industrial, but it was basically a TV show. Like it was a scripted, like scenes. And like, yeah, they did deal with these, you know, tools to teach in a industrial company. Won't say the company that it's from, but a major monopoly in Seattle. but they were like scenes. And I'm like, oh my God, like actually got to do something besides open a box or just speak about the products you're using. Like we got to actually do like acting.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh. I got a degree in this. This is good.
Well, it was such a pleasure too, because I've had the luck just recently, just as I'm kind of like trailing away from being an actor, I'm actually getting auditions and gigs that I'm actually getting to do some of the shit that I'm good at that I never get to do. Usually, it's like, I'm a manager at this company and this is how we do things. And we would like you to do them that way too. You know, and this was getting to be funny.
Yeah.
And our director would keep rolling after the script was done. And then, and once we kind of figured out that that's what she was doing, we would just start ad-libbing.
Oh, how fun.
And it was so much fun. And I just booked this other thing. Well, it's not super confirmed. I'm not allowed to say it's super confirmed, but this other thing that I auditioned for that I was like, oh my God, for once my eyes and my big facial expressions were like, yes, we want that. You know, it wasn't, I just talked to somebody else that also is going to do the same thing. And she said, it's so great to be doing something where I don't have to think to myself, do nothing. And I died because that's me. That is generally me doing any other kind of work. It's like, don't do anything with your face. Raise your eyebrow a little bit. Stop raising your eyebrow. You know, smile a little tiny bit.
Yeah, it was great because I got to play a character that was a little goofy, I guess.
You were hilarious.
Okay, here's the thing. I don't know how to feel about it though, because our director would be like, "Oh, I love what you're doing with the character. I just love this character that you're doing." And I was like, "I'm not doing a character. I thought that was practice and I just did the lines. Well, it's just me." Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that just makes your job like an idiot. I didn't know I come across as an idiot most of the time. And so
you come across as funny.
So genuine. It seems so genuine. Science is really an idiot. That's the reason. That's the reason it came across.
You come across as genuine. And when you have a mask on, you look like you might be Mexican.
Yeah. You know, and that was Samantha, when you, I think we use the same company, the did this one. Mm-hmm. Did you rehearse where then you took the mask off? Like you wore it all the way until the actual shooting. And then they're like, okay, now you're shooting, mask off, and then do the shoot. Then did the scene and then mask back on.
I don't remember.
And I mean, our thing was unique, so I think it may not have been for everybody. But I did really, part of me was like, okay, I've been so scared to go out and do stuff. But part of it was like, you know, I think we should rehearse with these off too. Because we're already here. Huh. Because I felt different every time we took the mask off. I was like, well, yeah. Now it's different. And I'm like, for some reason, I had trouble until once I had the mask off and I could just say the things, I'm like, oh, now it makes sense. But I think it made me feel like, oh, I'm in a pretend world. Yeah. As long as I have this mask on.
There's something about real. A mask. There's something about a mask too, that I got to do some live streams during the pandemic with one of the bands I sing with, and I had to wear a mask and it was terrible. I mean, I think I still did fine, but because the mask made me feel like I wasn't doing my job as a singer. I think it's the same thing with an actor. Like half of your face is covered and it's hard to open and close your mouth. And I literally one time I took some gaff tape and taped the bottom of the mask to my chin so it wouldn't move around so much. And it does.
I feel like that'd be even harder as a singer. As an actor, I do have to say, though, that I think that would be a pretty fun exercise, especially for on-camera practice of having it covered, because then it's really focused on, am I getting everything across with my eyes?
Yeah.
But so should you be? Like, won't you become an over-eye actor?
No, because getting it across doesn't mean big this, that. It's just, it's clear with your eyes. I mean, you see when they do ultra close-ups on the films and stuff, they're not having huge expressions, but you see everything.
They're so fast, I think.
You're seeing
so much action here.
Yes.
That's so much action here. Taking away 90% of my tools.
No, I get it. I totally get it. I've taught on camera stuff too. And it's that thing of like, I don't know if I can do it, for God's sakes. Like that Michael Caine, like I'm thinking it and it's coming across. Like,
yeah. You're thinking.
I mean, I can't even get it across to people in real life, right? I'm trying to like make sure they don't think I'm being a jerk, or like Lowell, without his face, without his mask on, I didn't know when. He's going to come on this show too. But I didn't know like when he was bullshitting or, you know.
He is.
Smirk, like you smile. Like, are they kidding? Are they kidding? I don't know.
That's a good point. I had an errand that I had to do the other day. And with a mask on and glasses on. I mean, I didn't have sunglasses, but just my other glasses, regular glasses. And the woman kept apologizing to me. Like, I'm so sorry. It's just going to be another moment. I'm da da da. And I'm like, oh, it's fine. You know, you're out. You don't need to apologize. You're at work. Thank you for your time. I was being like super nice. And she kept on apologizing. And then after I left, pissed. I was thinking, I'm like, did she think I looked mean or like impatient? Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, definitely. So, yeah, maybe it's what you're saying. It's like harder to read.
Yes.
People.
It's that thing about you have to then figure out, OK, I'm not somebody that usually communicates in this way. So then how do I make sure I do that anyway? Like, you know what I mean? Like if you're somebody that usually you smile, but you're not saying thank you so much and things like that, or hello, welcome, then you have to all of a sudden compensate in that way.
But Amber, I want to ask you, I was looking up your stuff. You're like a Renaissance woman. Like what don't you do? Like, is there anything you don't do now?
You know,
you're a singer, a band.
Yeah.
Do you play an instrument in it?
No. Percussion, castanets, but that's about it.
Okay. Actor, burlesquer.
Burlesque performer.
I was like, I don't know what they call it. Where did this start? What was the first that you did?
As a kid, you know, started acting at school. And then when I went to undergrad, studied acting. And then I did a grad school program, but never graduated. And while I was doing that, somebody had asked me, do you want to come teach a Shakespeare workshop? And I said, well, what? Sure, whatever. And then from then on, being a teacher was what paid my bills most of the time. So that became the thing that I would do to support myself. And I found that that was so amazing because you could be connecting to communities and to people that you might not connect to otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it kept me humble as an actor, in a different way. So, I mean, I started teaching and, where did other stuff come from? I never wanted to do burlesque. Well, band stuff. I always wanted to not do musical theater. My grad school program was a musical theater. And then I was like, no, I want to do experimental stuff in Shakespeare. And then later
the stuff that sells. That's what you wanted to do.
Exactly.
Like, I'm going to make money at this. I'm going to do Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And experimental. Yeah.
Well, now everybody knows everyone goes into theater for the money.
We do.
Exactly. So I realized that I wanted to do more kind of cabaret stuff. And I had a friend whose husband played the trumpet and was learning how to play the accordion. And he said, well, my friend who's a drag king is moving up here from Santa Cruz. And I said, yay. And then we started doing like Kurt Vile tunes and things like that. And as a trio, and we were Miss Mamie Lavana, the exotic mulatta, and her white boy band. And then that was a thing for many years. And we just kept adding white boys. And it just turned out they were all white.
Yeah.
Which is, I say that with an facial expression of like, sorry, but you know, yeah, white boy band. And that really opened my eyes to doing music. I get to decide what I want to do. I get to decide who I want to do it with. Nobody's picking me or deciding on do I want you or not. Are you too tall, too short, too fat, too skinny, too brown, too white, whatever it is. And that was a really just eye-opening and freeing, amazing thing. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like, you know, being in front of a band. And burlesque was sort of shot off of that because it's also, my friend was teaching. I never thought I wanted to do it. And I went and saw a show with her and I was like, maybe I should take your class. And then I realized, oh, it's just me. I don't have to herd a bunch of other musicians. I get to choose what song I want to do, what the theme of the act is. And all I wanted to be was funny. Like my first act was as Uhura from Star Trek, Uhura mm-hmm. and Tribbles to Prince's Darling Nikki. Ta-da.
Yeah.
You know, and burlesque is one of those things that if you aren't familiar with it, that's the magic of it, is that it can be sexy even if what you're doing is your character, even if your character is not being sexy, let's say. You know, your character's like, what is this?
Almost naked?
What? Yeah. My Uhura act is all about Tribbles. She's finding Tribbles like here and there, and in the end the bra comes open and Tribbles fly out.
Yeah.
But that's the great thing about it. Like, oh, here's this funny gag I love. And then how do I make that into an entire act? And kind of the same with the band stuff. The band stuff gave me a whole other suitcase full of tricks and a way to be with the burlesque and the band stuff. I get to be me. I'm not being somebody else as an actor, but I'm also not trying to convince somebody else, I'm the person you want. Mm-hmm. It's just saying, this is who I am. All I have to do is stand out here and sing with my great band behind me. And you like me or you don't, whatever, you know? So it's just very freeing.
Kind of reminds me of stand up a little.
That's just what I was going to
say. Yeah.
Completely. Completely.
Yeah, because it's you. Yeah. Because it's just you. And you have to get to a point of like me
or
don't.
You're just up there. It's something you enjoy and you're like, how do you figure out how to make it into an act or make it funny?
Yeah.
I mean, like, you want the audience to laugh, but it's very freeing because it's not about I'm doing this stand up to secure an audition. mm-hmm. or to get a part. It's just, I'm doing my set because it's what I enjoy.
Yeah.
And
there's no,
yeah, just I mean, getting to be, and the more you bring to yourself, the more you bring to the stage, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what discovering.
Yeah.
I'm sure like stand up, like discovering with burlesque, there's a monthly show that happened before the pandemic that would happen called Sunday Night Sugar Shack. SHUGASHAQ, hosted by Brick House. And she is.
It's a brick.
And the thing about it that was fascinating is you have all these, you know, people of color performing. And I was like, I need to stretch myself. I should do an act for Sugar Shack that is more, I'm just being sexy. But you have to figure out what is it for you that is sexy. And I realized that, like, I thought, oh, I still, now I haven't done one. I want to do an act to Earth, Wind, and Fire's Serpentine Fire, which is a song that just makes me like go the whole way through. And I was like, well, for me, Sugar Shack is that. I mean, Sugar Shack has had some of these people that I watch and you're just like, oh my God, I want to have sex with you. Like, it doesn't matter who it is. But they're so sexy and they're like, you know, twerking and like all over the audience and stuff like that. And I'm like, not me, you know, my act is I'm walking in, pretend I'm a cop and I frisk people. Like that's my version of super sexy, you know, but it's that interesting thing about all kinds of performing and like, how does that pull out of you who you really are and help you find who you really are and what you really want to do in life?
Yeah.
Did you, when you quit your grad program, was it because you were just not satisfied with the type of work you were doing there?
Well, I finished the whole, like all the classes and I had started in on my thesis, but then the teachers, you know, when you look back and you're like, wow, I should have really talked to somebody higher up than them about this. Mm. They didn't tell me that I wasn't getting a passing grade in like the main studio class. And so I had to redo that and was going to have to do a big cabaret project.
Uh-huh.
And I started in on it. And then part of me was like, you know what? Fuck you. Like just, you know, and I think part of it wasn't smart of me because I could have made more in some of the jobs I've done as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it was one of those things that I should have just quit after the first year when I realized like, this isn't for me. Like, I don't want to be a musical theater person. I don't want to just go on to be a teacher, you know? Yeah.
Did you have aspirations toward like film or was it theater at the time?
Not so much. I think I'd kind of gotten turned off by film because I remember in college there would be things that would say like, oh, here's this role. And I'd be like, oh, that's me. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can move and I do stage combat and all stuff. Yeah. And then it would be like athletic build. And again, you're like, fuck off.
Yeah.
You know, so it was that kind of an atmosphere that always felt like I was never the thing. I had an audition for a film here that I just saw like an old Facebook post about it. It was a film that never got finished. I don't even remember what it was, but like it took place in the 30s. And this was like the black woman cook. And like, it describes her like, and like, she has one breast that's pretty much hanging out. Like, and she's standing by the door. And I was like, oh my God, really? Like, this is what you want me to, all right. Okay. You know, like just,
new character idea. Okay.
Yeah. Film has always felt like it's not the place for me unless somebody comes and says, I'm always like, if somebody's like, I want you for this, then great. You know, I was in, I'm in a film called The Parish, which is David Hogan and Angela DeMarco and Mighty Tripod. And I auditioned for it, but it was also nice because people I knew were like, yeah, you know what I mean? We really want you to read for this.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like sort of, hey, I'm applying for this or, you know, I'm really perfect for this, but you'll probably think I'm too fat and too short, whatever, or too tall, probably too tall for film. So, yeah.
The more stuff I do, the more excited I, like the more actors I'm meeting, I get more like, oh, I kind of write, like, I feel like I get more excited about writing a script because I'm like, oh, there's someone else I can put in something.
Do you know, Silas, I have a friend of mine who she keeps wanting to do a web series. I haven't talked to her about it in a while, but she was always like, yeah, I want this web series and about moms and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, okay. But then I realized, like, I said, look, I don't need a big role, but if it's a series, here's what I want. I don't know. Have you seen Letterkenny? The show Letterkenny?
I started it, but I haven't.
No.
Oh my God. So just get yourself through a couple episodes because it's so worth it. It's one of those shows that like the characters, you're like, what the fuck? I started watching it because my goddaughter was visiting and I just heard her laughing her ass off in the other room. And I was like, what are you watching? And it came in. So people look up Letterkenny. So in Letterkenny, they use a lot of good music and they use a lot of slow motion. Sometimes it's about these people in a small town in Canada. But I said, here's what I want. You take notes on this, Silas.
Okay.
I want to be like the mom that everybody's like, we don't really know what she does for a living.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I think she has a badge. We're not sure. Sometimes she is carrying a gun. Yeah, she is. We don't know what she's doing. But every time she enters, it's like sunglasses and badass music and like she's super sexy, slow motion. And she looks like she's going to arrest you. And then she just takes off her glasses like she's going to totally lock you up in handcuffs. And then she just smiles and goes, hi, I made brownies. Anybody want some? And everybody's like, oh my God, we so love her. Like, that's all I need. That's all I need is just, I just want to be.
Slow motion scenes.
Sexy slow motion scenes, maybe carry a gun. But yeah, Letterkenny, I highly recommend it because it just has this, on one hand, you're like, is this just kind of a lowbrow comedy? And then you're like, well, kind of, but then also the characters are very sweet. That's part of what it is. Yeah. The characters are sweet.
Yeah, it was recommended to me because I think I was talking about Schitt's Creek and they were like, oh yeah, well, if you want to watch like another sort of like quirky Canadian series, like watch Letterkenny, it's really good.
If you like that quirky Canadian,
I mean, you know, story? Different vibe, I'm sure, but still they were like, you'll probably also like this. I'm like,
oh, Letterkenny's really quirky Canadian. My husband and I just rewatched an episode where there's all these sexual puns throughout the whole thing. And sometimes people are looking at each other like, did they just say that? Yeah, they did, didn't they? That have to do with the Mennonites that are in their neighborhood. And you just sit there going, are they really? Yes, they are doing that. Okay. So
Samantha's hiding. Just want spoilers.
I felt like there might have been a spoiler.
Oh, no spoilers.
That's what happened.
She's like, oh, no. Whoa.
Yeah. No. Well, I was curious about something you said earlier. You said when you were like, you've been getting more of these roles now as you're starting to transition out of acting.
Yeah.
Was that something that is okay for me to bring retiring? Up now? I was curious what.
I don't know I'm retiring, but Silas and I were talking about that when you went to change your shirt.
I went to change my shirt?
No. Samantha went to change your shirt.
Yeah, that's right. Before the show.
I've gotten tired of not having a consistent paycheck in my life. I worked at a private school for a while and had a decent paycheck, but you know, I'm old, getting old. My husband's a rocket scientist. He makes he has a good salary. And yes, a rocket scientist. I'm not being funny. He gave me a whole year that I could make jokes about his job. And now that year's over. So I'm not supposed to make any jokes. But I wanted a good salary. And I had an actress from LA that I was in a film with say, Amber, you got to go to LA during pilot season because you're perfect for police procedurals. And I had played, never on film, but like on stage, I played FBI agents or detectives or things like that. And there is something about it that really super resonates with me about all that. And if you put me in a dark blazer, I look like a detective. I actually had a fitting once and they said, let's put this blazer on here. I said, no, don't do it. And they're like, why? I said, I look like a detective. And they're like, no, just put it on. And I put it on. And they went, well, yeah. Oh yeah, you do look like a detective. I said, I told you. And so I started actually thinking, what if I what if, could I really actually be a cop? And so I started looking into it and going to, it's about 5 years ago, and going to information sessions, went to Seattle PD and King County Sheriff's Office, and got connected through a friend of mine whose sister is a deputy out on the peninsula. Another gal I know introduced me to a gal who is now a Seattle police officer, became a police officer at 53.
Really?
And yeah, 53. Yeah. And, started realizing that, like, yeah, especially after this summer, I already wanted to do it, but especially after the summer with all the protests, because for me, I'm not necessarily somebody to go out and protest. And for me, it's like, this is how I can help make change from the inside, you know, because I'm somebody that always wants to know both sides. So when people start talking about things, I'm like, I don't want to talk about it because I don't really know. There's no way to know everything from both sides about it. You know what I mean? Like, and so it's just sort of like, yes, this thing that happened is terrible. It should not have happened. Don't ask me to talk about it. Like, you know, it's just like, and I don't mean that to be evasive. I just mean it in a way that, like, I'm a mediator. I think part of that, I know my mother would say, it comes from having a Black dad and a white mom. So I'm kind of in the middle. I can talk about both things, you know, and always having that kind of a personality. So for me, this is like, this is how I can make change. I was, you know, I actually had a chance to actually say in this panel interview I had to actually say, like, I think, you know, law enforcement needs people like me. And I said, well, no, I'm actually going to say, you know, you need me, you know, which freaking ballsy thing to say, but yeah. I said it.
So. I was telling you.
Wow.
And I had mentioned to Amber that I spent a month, 6 weeks at a police academy in California. You know, one of the things I actually was, the idea of being a detective appealed to me. It wasn't until I didn't do research. It wasn't the internet, right?
Yeah.
I was in the academy when I learned how long it took to become a detective.
Yeah.
And I was like, they're like, oh yeah, no, that's like a 15-year thing. Then I was like, but Johnny Depp, still looked like a teenager when he was and I was like, what about all these people that come in and do, you know, like college, they do go in and they're like undercover in the dorms. Like, I had seen that. So that happens. But what they do is they pull regular police out for special assignments to do those things. It's not a normal, they're not normal. Yeah. They're not a detective.
Yeah.
No, it's just, they had a patrol person. Like, now we need someone young for this for a little bit. And then they send them back. Like, they don't often. So I was like, oh, well, that's disappointing.
Okay. Yes.
I thought that was like a 5-year. Oh, yeah. I put a few years in pulling people over and then left. So that was one of the reasons I left. But it was.
Do you know that I just remembered, I think when I went to high school, this my second high school, the one in San Francisco where I was taller than everybody, I came in like a couple months into the semester and I learned later that everybody thought I was a narc. Kid you not, like, you know, I'm like, I think it's not just because I was taller, like
a black blazer uniform.
Yeah, no, not at all. Plaid skirt, you know, navy blue cardigan, white shirt.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, they all thought I was a narc because they just thought I was too mature to have just been a student. So I guess that's 360.
Yeah, there was a big bust at my college campus. That's where I knew about the where they busted people about pot, right? And like half the dorm could tell the guy was a cop.
Yeah.
Like, just by his attitude and the way he's talking, they're like, dude sounds like a cop. Like, so yeah. Like when they got busted, everyone was like, oh yeah. Yeah, we knew that.
Y'all, whenever he had to go to the bathroom, he's like 10-9, 10-9, or whatever they say. Really.
10-4.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Okay, so you're going to be serious, you're retiring at least to become a cop, huh?
Yeah, I'm eventually. In the I'm in the interview process with Seattle Police Department.
Is that where they'll pay for it? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Any Washington state agencies, they hire you and then they send you to the academy.
And they don't discriminate against age?
Mm-mm, nope. I mean, you should see this gal that I know with SPD. She's in her 50s, but she's tall and extremely fit.
But you have to pass that physical test regardless,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, I did. Okay. I did. They just changed the test for all of Washington to better reflect the kind of training they do in the academy. And that, I think, was a wonderful move because it also made it a little more egalitarian. So people like me have an easier time passing the test, and you're not, you know, it's not like if you're 20 and male, you're going to get to the top of the list. You know, it's not quite that extreme.
It's funny. When I did apply at first, I was trying to get hired by a police department so that they would pay for it, right? The academy. Yeah. And I went to the physical test. I forget if that was first. And I tried running it and I couldn't get up the wall. Like, I don't know what, like there was a wall that you had to get up, and it was like a officer and a gentleman moment, right? I couldn't get it over. And I was like, and then I came back at the, I finished it. I think I skipped that or something. And then I sat there and I had appreciated that everyone was cheering me on. So I stayed and kept and cheered on other people. So I stayed there for other people. And I guess usually if people can't do it, they leave.
Yeah.
And so the person in charge was impressed and said, "Do you want to try again?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I went and I ran. There was only a couple of people that was left. And I flew over the wall. Like, I thought I was, because I didn't know that I would get it. And it was just a total mental collapse. Because it wasn't even hard when I tried it again. And it was like, oh my gosh. And then I got, to do interview, but I didn't get hired.
Well,
then
that's I had to pay myself. But I surprisingly to you, Silas, I know. But I've never wanted to be a cop. But I just want to play like a detective on TV.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
totally it. You know, I was thinking about, I was listening to your last podcast when you're talking about the top 10 films for women.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it was funny, not to completely change subject, but I was just thinking about this. Because I realized, like, I think I've not, most chick flicks, there was some point in my life where like the idea of a chick flick just became like, no, thank you. And I find it fascinating that, like, you know, cause you could probably, I can't even think of a chick flick that I'm like, oh yes, that movie. I mean, Dirty Dancing. That's a fun movie. I liked it. And yeah, romantic things are fun, but like, it's interesting to just think about that in terms of like, nowadays we're always talking about gender and all these different things, but like, what is it that,
and you're like, Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. Like, I remember I was doing a musical, like it was a reading of a musical about chick flicks. And I kept thinking, I haven't seen any of these movies that they're talking about. Like, I haven't seen Bridget Jones' Diary. I haven't seen Jerry Maguire. I've seen Ghost. I was thinking about like, what are the movies that I think are great? Like Bridesmaids, I liked. I have issues with it, but I liked it.
Fucking hilarious.
The part of it that was like, you know, when everybody was talking about the vomiting and diarrhea scene, and like, I was like, everybody talked about it like it was so bad, and it was amazing and hilarious.
Yeah. I don't remember it that much, to be honest.
I think the weird part about things like chick flicks and gender roles is I think there's a good 60-70% of the United States that is perfectly fine with gender roles.
Yeah.
And they don't think it's a big deal that there are chick flicks.
Yeah.
I think the people vocally in the city that tend to be, but because I know plenty of people who are, consider themselves liberals and are really fine with feminine and masculine
Yeah.
being separate things and okay with it. So
well, I think it's really good to like, you know, I've had one of my stepdaughters both of my stepdaughters, we've talked about gender, and I have a couple friends that want to be they, them, and all that stuff. And I think it's great. And I think sometimes it's just sort of like, those of us that have been around a while, just give us a chance, but just give us a little break, you know, because we were used to this. And I'm used to the fact that, like, you know, I knew an actress that she wanted to go by with one of the children's theater touring shows. She announced, she said, I'm so-and-so and my pronouns are they, them. And to me, it was a little like, because she was super feminine. She was like sort of the same type as me. She was a Latina. And it was like, okay, I get it. But what? At the same time, because there's that thing about if you're already super, super what we're used to as one gender, you know, then I find it more difficult. And I find that, you know, talking to my stepdaughter years ago about the fact that, like, yeah, sometimes you could technically feel like a boy or like a girl. I mean, you know, I like to like shoot guns and drive fast cars and all these things that are kind of like boy-like, but then I look like this and I do burlesque and put on glittery high heels and all the kind of stuff that you can always be both, you know, but it's fascinating as the younger generations come up, what's happening. And I'm fascinated by my own reaction that sometimes is like, oh, those young whippersnappers, I can't believe that they're destroying our ideas of gender, you know.
I guess I don't get mad or upset. I guess sometimes I feel like I'm like, well, I've just known you so long.
Yeah.
Like literally if you wanted to change your name, I would have trouble remembering. It's gonna be like, well, but no, it's not that I don't accept what you is. I'm just like, I can barely remember so much.
Yeah. Well, that's what I agree. Like, it's not that, and you know, it doesn't piss me off or anything. It's more like, I'm realizing what it must have felt like for my parents' generation or other generations to sort of go, okay, now this is what's happening. This is, you know, or you go even further back and people, my mom's family going like, oh, so Loretta just had a baby with a Negro. Okay. Like, you know, that. People having to adjust to stuff, you know? Yeah, I said Negro.
No, I was actually just thinking, wait, is your mom the white one?
Yeah, mom's the white one.
Okay, because I was thinking when you said you assumed that my mom was the white one, and I was just like putting two and two together in a way.
Well, and you know, my mom and dad met in Hawaii. My dad was in the military and my mom was in grad school. And my dad was actually part of a very groundbreaking race relations program for the military. And the big joke was, oh, well, he related really well. Got himself a white woman. You get it. Yeah. It's a silly joke, but I try, you know,
no
comedy podcast.
My wife was a multicultural studies major. Right.
I once dated a guy who would give me chocolate in the wintertime. Especially because he told me that's for me to help me keep my color. And I wasn't mad because the chocolate cake was just so good. It was so good.
Samantha double majored in Asian studies.
Oh, shut up, Silas.
Does that mean you have an Asian partner?
Yes,
I do. She likes Asians so much, she's now creating them.
That's so cute.
I can't entirely say shut up because we are expecting. But but our kid is going to be like a majority white. If genetics
your partner
works.
Mixed?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Mhm.
They look alike to me.
We got like a whole United Nations up in our genetics now going on. But no,
It is an interesting thing you would think about. Like, I have this book that I think was somebody's dissertation that's about one drop of blood in the United States and that whole thing. When, of course, I have not ever read it, but I've had it for a long time because I feel like I should read it. That in the, you know, I don't know how much it is outside of the United States, but this whole idea that like all three of us can say I'm black, you know, and at the same time, we can also say I'm mixed, mm-hmm. you know, and I feel like,
I don't know, you know, it was actually not that long ago that I kind of had the realization of the one drop thing was actually a white supremacy rule in order to keep their property.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't actually a black rule. It was a white rule.
Yeah.
Oh, because I never thought black people made that up.
I don't know. I just thought it was an actually at one time, I think I thought it was an acceptance thing. Like, no, one drop. And you know, you're one of us. Like that's what I had heard from black people that's before.
Sweet. I've never heard that.
I didn't connect it till later. That was like, oh no, it's because they wanted to make sure they still owned you.
Yeah. And see, I didn't remember that. I just think I always feel like that, not even coming from that. And I know that within the black community, there's, you know,
colorism.
There has been discrimination based on, you know, if you're high yellow or you're not or whatnot. But yes, welcome. Welcome to the high yellow.
No, I forgot I had forgotten the term. I'd been called.
Yellow. Oh, man.
But that idea that in the United States that, like, you know, my grandma was lighter than me and could pass, and like her siblings all decided to pass and just be white, you know, but that they were that pale, but they were still black. And people would ask my grandma, they would say, well, Miss Lily, are you, you know, what are you? Are you Spanish? Are you this? Are you that? And she would just be like, she has the cutest voice. She was like, no, honey, I'm a Negro. Yeah. And that, you know, it's fascinating that to me, it's very fascinating that we can have that duality about it. And especially, I think, like, if you're not like, I feel like Samantha, I feel like you kind of look more black than I do in that sense, you know? And so like, what are the, anyway.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Especially depending on how my hair is though.
Yeah, exactly. You know, cause like, I just got the quote unquote good hair.
Well,
as they call it. Well,
you know,
yeah, exactly. Good according to who. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amber, before we get you out of here, we have the ask you the black and a half world famous 7 questions. So we got to get these out of here before.
Okay.
I don't know if you know them.
No.
Okay.
Because you said you. I didn't get that far as I scrolled through the podcast.
Good. First, just the first answer comes to your head. You know, it's not a right or wrong answer. 7 questions. Number 1, what are you most nerdy about?
Oh my God. That's hard to say. Oh, what am I most nerdy about? Like, I feel like I should know that instantly what I'm most nerdy about. Maybe sewing.
Sewing.
Stage combat.
Wow. No, that's great. Do you cosplay? Is that what?
No. Sewing like burlesque and all kinds of stuff. My grandma taught me.
Yeah, that's burlesque, so cool, are a bunch of sewing nerds.
I did, but I also did like in the grad school program, my work study was working in the costume shop. So that's how I learned how to pattern and all this other stuff. So
Hey, number 2, what's something that you love to eat?
Banh mi.
Yes.
Doesn't matter what kind.
Shut up, Silas. Oh my God. Banh mi is just delicious. It's just like,
yes.
Amazing.
Number 3. What's something
that makes fun of me whenever I like
anything
Asian?
No, I just thought your reaction to banh mi was just kind of
funny. I want a banh mi sandwich now.
I know. I got one the other night. When I got home from that shoot, we were on set for like 10 or 11 hours. And my husband and 2 stepchildren had gone to my in-laws for the evening. And I was like, I'm going to order whatever I want. And that's something the rest of the family doesn't really like banh mi. And I was like, I'm going to get some banh mi. Yes.
Yum.
I'm not like it. That's weird. What's something that you love to drink?
Oh, my favorite cocktail if you're talking alcoholic drinks, favorite alcoholic cocktail is called The Last Word. And it's equal parts lime juice, Luxardo, gin, and chartreuse. And chartreuse is really expensive, I found out. My other favorite thing to drink is a Mexican Coke.
Okay. Well, I know what that is. I don't know what Luxardo is.
I know.
It's maraschino liqueur. And chartreuse is like an absinthe. Not quite.
Okay.
But, well, it's like an absinthe and it has a natural green color. And I just found out that it's made by like three monks in France and they're the only ones that know the recipe. So that's why it's so expensive. Yeah. But it's a really good cocktail. When I was at a party, they, I walked in and they said, you can have this or you can have a last word. And I was like, I don't know. And some guy I didn't know across the room said, I've had two. I can't focus on your face. Like, I'll have that.
Okay. What kind of music do you love?
That depends on the day. That depends on the day. My playlist can have, lately I've got a lot of Ethiopian jazz from the 60s and 70s. Hold
on. Ethiopian jazz?
Look it up. Oh my God. Look it up.
It's, well, I like British soul, so.
Yeah.
Look up Ethiopian jazz. Look up
I'll send you some things. Ethiopian jazz. But then some days I have playlists that have got like Missy Elliott and House of Pain and DMX and just, you know, yeah. But then also swinging jazz. But I would say right now, like the Ethiopian, one of my favorite albums ever.
Yeah.
Just regular jazz is the Ramsey Lewis Trio, The In Crowd, live at the Bohemian Caverns in 1968. In Washington, D.C. And it sounds like if you're sad, listen to that first track because it will cheer you the fuck up because it sounds like the best time ever. You can hear the audience laughing in the background and all this kind of stuff. So these are long answers, I know.
Oh, great. What do you love to create?
Imagining going to a concert again.
I know. One live concert. I do love to sew, but really and truthfully, I'd say I really love making music. And not necessarily like creating my own songs, just making music with other people. I just saw one of my bandmates in the funk band that I'm in, called Off the Hook, Old School Cool. And that band and this other band, The Klein Party, which does more like some jazz, but also like klezmer stuff, like just working on how to put a song across and how best to do it and which way I want to do it with my, you know, how am I using my voice and how are we coming in and out? Where's the solo going? And that kind of collaboration with people and that feeling, you know, when you're like, yes, this rocks, you know, it's just, yeah, it's amazing. Cause it's not only about you, it's about you and these other people that you really like, hopefully you really like them, that you're creating something with.
What's a game you love to play?
Telestrations.
What?
You know, Telestrations?
No.
It is a combination of telephone and Pictionary. Oh. It's actually a board game that you can get. And I love it because you've got little dry erase things. And so let's say you get a card and you all get to look at what your card is and don't tell anybody. And if my card says tree frog, and then I have to draw a tree frog. And then I hand it to the next person and they go, what the fuck is that? And they guess whatever they want to guess.
Yeah.
And then they pass it on and that person has to draw that guess. And you're hoping by the time it gets around that it gets back to that it stays tree frog. But the most fun part is when it doesn't. Like there's one that was, it was triplets. And somebody drew a stick figure of a woman laying down with her knees up. And then like, three tiny stick figures kind of at her feet. And somebody's guess was Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I love how most people I say that to like start laughing when I say Gulliver's Travels. The two of you are just like, oh yeah.
Yeah, sure. It's like that makes sense. It's like a giant and a few smaller people.
Yeah. So it's very fun because it, you know, and it doesn't, you know, it can be with kids or with adults, but it's just sort of like the ridiculousness of it makes it all the more fun. That and whether or not awesome. People can draw doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. What a good party game.
Love that. Okay. And last question.
Yes.
In 100 years.
Oh God.
When someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Oh shit, Silas, you're going to make me cry. Being a good police officer, helping to contribute to the change in culture in law enforcement and creating healing in communities when it comes to race relations. Yeah.
That's cool. Unexpected.
Well, cool. And I was thinking to be known as Seattle PD's sexiest police officer, but then you just got so real with it.
Thank you. That as well. That as well.
Oh my goodness.
Can you keep doing burlesque if you're a police officer?
You know, I know that when I talked to a King County recruiter for King County Sheriff's Office, he's just said, whatever you do in your own time is your own business. But, you know, I think there's a lot to think about in terms of like what your social media profile is. I have seen a lot of police officers and people that you're like, really, you posted that? So I feel like I would have a tendency to be more conservative than a lot of the officers and deputies that I see posting out there. And that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, if they can post that at the Klan rallies, you can post.
I was thinking about like people that are posting pictures of themselves in bikinis and stuff,
yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah,
gosh, horrible. It's been, that stuff's been, well, obviously it's been on the news, what you're saying about the Klan thing. But I had the other day when I was out and about,
I
saw somebody walking in a white hat. And my first thing was like, oh, my God, they've got a Klan hat on here. It wasn't. It was just like a white like hat with like one of the puffs.
It had a point on the top.
A fuzzy ball on the top.
It's just this stuff has been like out there so much that like I seriously like was like, what the heck? Oh, okay. Oh, goodness.
Okay. Well, Amber Wolf, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Welcome.
Spending this hour with us. And people can they can check out your latest work. Where can they check you out? Like,
well, on Instagram, I'm at Cafe Olé Olé, and that's the French Cafe A-U-L-A-I-T, and then it's Spanish Olé O-L-E. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Cafe Olé Olé.
I don't know. I started ending that like as if anything is going on still.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, but also, they catch you at the on Fridays. No, they can't.
Yeah, no. But if you look up othband.com is the funk band I'm in, and the kleinparty.com is the klezmer and some jazz group that I'm with. And you can always look up Miss Mamie Lovana. We don't do much nowadays, but we're on Spotify. Miss Mamie Lovana, the exotic mulatto.
Check that out. Okay. Black and a half.